Okay, first and foremost, I'd like to welcome all of you today to hear from Elenchus and their overview of SAS Power's new capacity reservation service. Before we get too far and I turn it over to John, I thought we'd take a couple minutes to do some really quick introductions around the room. Starting with folks from SAS Power, we've got Corey Hako, who is our Vice President, Transmission and Industrial Services, and Troy King, who's our Vice President, Finance and Business Performance, and CFO. We also have a number of representatives from both finance and key and major accounts. I'm not going to go through all those names. We also have members of Saskatchewan Rate Review Panel. We've got Elaine Barber and Steve Kemp in attendance today, and we've got Al Johnston on the line, as is Jerry Forrest, who's the advisor to the Rate Review Panel. Because this session is being recorded, I've got a number of what I hope to be simple housekeeping rules. I'm just going to read off the list here for those of you who are listening via call, I'd ask that you please mute your phone. If anybody in the room today has a question, the way we get this information recorded is via microphone, so I'd ask that you put up your hand. We'll have somebody come out and bring you the mic. If those on the line happen to have a question, I think John is more than happy to take questions throughout the presentation, so simply unmute and perhaps state your name and then address your question at that time. So far so good. I'm not picking up any background noise, but if for some reason we were starting to pick some up, we'll give kind of a warning or a note that we're picking up something just to remind everybody to mute. And if that doesn't work, I believe we have the option of just simply muting everybody. If that were to happen, we'll be sure to open up the lines on a number of occasions just to give an opportunity to ask any questions. Lastly, everybody should know this, the old cell phone rule. Again, if you've got a phone, just make sure it's on vibrate mode, and that too will get picked up on the recording. I think with that, I'm going to turn it over to John Todd, President of Elenchus Research Associates. I know he's got a bit of a bio within his slide deck, so I'll let him cover off who he is. With that, John Todd.
Good afternoon, everybody. As Scott said, this is an open discussion, not a sit-and-listen presentation. So as I walk through things, please feel free at any time to interrupt with a question or comment. That would be the most productive thing to hear what people think. I think everybody in the room has a handout version of the slides, which are also being projected. I won't go through that second slide. I've been here for rate review panel sessions with SAS Power a couple times now, so I don't think I'm unfamiliar to people. President of the company and been hanging around the regulatory world for, well, if you include before rate hearings, about 40 years. So that's why I've got white hair. but it's there if anybody cares about looking at it more closely. So what I want to cover today, again, with your input, are the five topics. The forces disrupting the power sector. So this is really background. There's some questions asked in the preliminary stakeholder session. I'm not sure what you called it. There's some questions that were said, okay, so why is the CRS happening? What's going on in the electricity world that SAS Power and others are going in this sort of direction? So that's why I'm starting off with a bit of that background. The second topic is structured. It's a way I've started structuring these discussions in the last couple of years, the animal kingdom of market disruption. These labels, the animal kingdom, comes from what I found a very interesting article, which was targeted at strategic planning processes generally, and have used it within the electricity sector a few times now. So I'll be talking about the animal world in terms of white elephants, gray rhinos, and black swans. You'll see what exactly what that means. You're not familiar with it soon. The highlight is white elephants are not what I used to think of them as, is wasteful money from government projects. White elephants are a bit different in this context. Then, again, as part of really the preamble, and most of this is preamble, is how do you respond from a 10-year perspective? So I think it's really important when we think about disruptions in this industry that we look at the long term. So it's the response. That does all lead into my specific comments on the CRS tariff design. Part five in the topics is open discussion. That does not mean save things. That means that's sort of more of a wrap-up discussion after dealing with specifics on the way through. In terms of that, the topics of the agenda, is there anything else related or an angle that people would like to flag up front to cover?
Just some levity for you. What would you turn your animal that we're dealing with right now?
Well, all of them, as you'll see. My favorite, though, is the gray rhino. The gray rhino is the one where you hear the rumbling, you know something's coming, but you don't know what it is. That's where I was in coronavirus a week ago. Now I think, and it's gone from being a black swan a month ago to being a gray rhino last week to being a white elephant now. So we can bounce them around. The animals are very changeable. The six forces disrupting the power sector, there are multiple and interrelated trends. And the essence of this discussion is things I've been talking about. I had explicit discussion, I think, four different Canadian jurisdictions within the last year. They're things that we've been talking about for at least 5 years. So this is kind of a recap. Probably none of it's going to be news to you. So it's an effort to really pull together things that are happening in this industry. Markets are transforming. Back in the 90s, I also did telecom regulation. When I started in the beginning of 1990, the telecom industry, think back, those of you who are anywhere near as old as I am, think back, the telecom sector was a pure monopoly. In the Saskatchewan Telephone, you had one company you could go to for all your telephone services. Ontario and Quebec, it was Bell Canada. A pure monopoly, regulated rates, completely in the traditional type of world. But their market was transformed by technology. Essentially, the telephone system became a big computer. Technological change was a disruptor, which has led to, ultimately, to the world we have today, where the Bell Canadas, the SAS Powers, or SAS Telecoms of the world are still around. In fact, the ones who, as part of a merger and so on, there's only a few of the former telecommunications monopolies around, doing very, very well. But they look completely different, and they live in a competitive world. The markets are transforming, I argue, in exactly the same way in electricity. Investments are being made in this sector that have a 20, 30, 40, 50-year life. Before those investments are totally amortized, the world could be completely different. To me, that's very important in terms of this transforming the market from a monopoly to a competitive market. And you are in the middle of that right now. It's already partially competitive. That's why the CRS rate is being introduced. It's in response to that. The transforming of the markets will continue. my expectation is that by the 20 years from now, as we're 20 years down the road with telecom, looking back to beginning of the 90s, I guess 30 years down, by the time we're 20 or more years looking back, we'll be saying, oh, do you remember when the electricity sector was a monopoly? Wasn't that sort of those strange old days? And now we've got a completely competitive sector. That does not mean we're going to have competitive wires. That does not mean we're going to be transmitting electricity through the air like cell phone service. But what it means is there will be competitive bypass, that price will be the only thing that matters to the wires and the poles, as well as everything else. If somebody doesn't like the price of the wires, they will install perhaps a little hydrogen generator in their basement, and they don't need the electric utility. So this is transformation. We're not talking about what's going to happen next year. We're talking about what's going to happen during the lifetime of the existing investments, which create a risk that that asset will become stranded before the cost is fully recovered. And in this sector, you have to think about the lifetime of the assets, not next year. So that's the market transformation, which sometimes, like any white elephant, elephants look like they move slowly. I don't know if you watch nature movies or if you've been to Africa, as I have, and you watch the elephants, if they get upset, they can change, they can move very quickly. So can markets. Now, that market transformation, of course, being driven by the second bullet, technologies are advancing. Everybody's aware of solar panels, wind turbines, and so on. They know that generation is now competitive. Every jurisdiction across Canada, there are non-utility generators. And that's becoming more and more common. Self-generation is just getting off the ground because of technological change. The one thing that is really slowing down the dramatic market change is the technology around storage. If there were something to disrupt the storage side of things, i.e. a very low-cost storage technology, then when that happens, or if, there will be much more rapid market transformation. These are interrelated. Industries are converging. As I work in both the natural gas sector and electricity sector, there are gas companies that are saying in areas where you have large new developments outside of town, are saying, when a new development is being built, we, the gas utility, or a gas company, are a competitive alternative to the electric company. We can set up a gas turbine, not just for an industrial customer, we can set up a gas turbine in a residential development area that serves that residential development, and you don't have to connect to the electricity company. In Ontario, I know those proposals are being advanced to developers. Developers are reluctant to adopt a different technology. They're very cautious. They think about building. They don't think about how can I be off-grid. But those kinds of opportunities are being examined. The industries are converging. It's energy. It's not electricity. It's not natural gas. Consumption patterns are changing. The customers, a lot of customers here, the customers are changing. Not only do they say, gee, I'm no longer captive to the utility, they're also saying, I want things that are different. They are looking at ways to change the profile of their load. In other jurisdictions, the difference in cost during peak demand hours, like when everybody comes from work, first thing in the morning, when people turn all the lights on, the difference between the price in those hours and the price in off-peak hours, like the middle of the night, is dramatically different. Not so much here, but the larger the price difference is, the larger the incentive for customers to say, we're going to pay the real price of power, and we are going to take action to change the way we consume. There are also, outside the electricity sector, technological changes, which are disrupting the consumption pattern. I have a shall we say, almost on behalf of utilities, a fear of electric vehicles. Electric vehicles, if electrification of transportation happens dramatically, and last year I was in Norway, and I said, here's where it's happened. They have passed the 50% mark of new vehicles, at least the beginning of last year, being sold were fully electric. Not hybrids, fully electric. About 80% were either hybrid or electric. That's a transformation. Electric vehicles have a very different consumption pattern than all the rest of our uses. They draw power when they're plugged in, and as electric vehicle charging stations get more and more powerful, they suck a lot of juice very quickly. If there's widespread adoption in an uncontrolled way, the load on the grid, particularly downstream near where people are plugging in, could be huge. As I'll mention in the future, that leads into issues such as we need to plan ahead to have smart electric vehicle charging so that it does not disrupt the grid. Again, a disruption consumption pattern, because of technological change, one of the disruptors, is part of the disruptive transforming of the market. Environmental concerns are increasing. And exactly how are they changing? We're not sure. What's going to happen with carbon pricing? There's been a one provincial level Supreme Court decision that has put the constitutionality of the federal initiative in question. Where will that pan out? Presumably that will end up at the Supreme Court of Canada. Environmental concerns of the public are driving a lot of policy changes. Policy is not like technology. You know, I look around at the news the last couple of days. If the public is afraid of something, coronavirus, the way that governments respond can either be minimal, as we see in some countries, or can be a massive response that is very disruptive. A political response is much more volatile than a technological change. Part of that feeds into the whole prosumer concept, prosumers, sort of professional consumers, who are getting much more sophisticated about their power consumption, taking more control, wanting more control, wanting more information. It's a different marketplace for customers. Now I want to get into the animal kingdom, but any comments, reactions, anything anybody would like to say before I move on? Okay. So I'm going to start with the white elephants. The white elephants are the known knowns, things we know are there. So we know what they're there, and we actually know, or have a pretty good idea what the impact is going to be. What intrigued me about this white elephant concept in the strategic planning articles is it was done by, Harvard or one place like that, you know, an academic researcher that does strategic planning across many sectors. And the comment about white elephants is that across sectors, we know the challenges, the disruptions that are coming at us. We know exactly what they look like. Yet, typically, companies are not responding to them. And I turn to the electricity sector, and I'm not talking specifically about SAS Power, I'm not talking about Saskatchewan, I'm saying generally, especially across Canada, I work in every jurisdiction across Canada, but also around the world. We know that there's change coming, and what I see is very little response to prepare for that change. For example, a couple of the major drivers. Load loss. Every utility in Canada that I deal with, and everything I read about other jurisdictions, everybody knows load loss not only is coming, but is happening today because they've experienced it already. So this is why it's a known or white elephant. It's there in front of us. It's different. Most elephants are gray. It's different than what we've dealt with in the past. But we know exactly what it is. And we know there's no escaping it. Load loss will come with self-generation replacing grid supply. At the present time, across the country, you've got relatively small load loss. And there's two kinds of load loss. One is you lose some power being sold to the customer, but they're still paying to be connected to the grid, they're still getting backup, they're still having improved reliability to the grid and so on. It's one thing to lose people buying power. And in other jurisdictions where the companies that generate the power are different than the utilities that transmit and distribute it, it's the generators that are afraid of the load loss, the basic load loss. Here, of course, SAS Power is also vulnerable to that. The more frightening part for utilities is grid defection. If a customer disconnects, and all this technological background is saying, not will it happen, the only question is when it will happen. And my example is, I've been off grid for 20 years in my cabin up in the north of Toronto. And it was strictly a matter of price. We were not near the grid. We bought this lovely little cottage. There's a boat ride away from the shore. And said, oh, we should have electricity. Talk to Hydro One. Yeah, we'll connect you for $100,000. Even 20 years ago, I could build an off-grid solar system that met all our needs for a lot less than $20,000. So I learned then, competition is all about price, nothing else. And I love it when I get into meetings with Hydro One, and they say, well, people won't leave the grid because they need reliability. And I say, you know, up where I am, 20 years I've had one planned outage to replace the batteries. All my neighbors across the lake complain about Hydro One outages, but once a month. So reliability is also actually a matter of price. You know, it's not a safety net to say people need the grid for reliability. It's how much are they prepared to pay for the reliability that they need in ways other than having the grid. Today, in most circumstances, it's not economic to go off grid. Within 5 years, 10 years at most, at least some customers, other than the extreme tail like I was, the tail of distribution, at least some customers will be finding economic to go off grid. The utilities have to be in a position to respond to that. So grid defection will happen as the cost of backup and storage goes down. Customers are diverse and have different needs. It's not as though 1 year everybody has to stay in the grid and the next year nobody needs the grid. It'll be a gradual transition where a larger and larger proportion of customers will be looking for either utility, give me something that is price competitive, or I will go to the alternative, which is price competitive, but it also gives me the reliability and the convenience and everything else that I want. And it's reassuring for senior executives who are retiring in 5 years to say, it's not going to happen in my career. For young people coming into the industry, they say, you know what? In the early 1990s, the only job in the telecom sector was a utility. By 2000, most of the jobs are outside the utility. On the flip side, and also a little more uncertain, is electric vehicle adoption. Here we've got the potential of stranding with loss of load. On the other hand, we have the possibility of transportation being electrified, which is the largest non-electric consumption now. If there's a radical change in the transportation sector, the demand for electricity by EVs will be massively disruptive to the grid, in that you will not have a grid, perhaps not even generation, that's sufficient to meet that demand. There's a lot of planning and thought to be given there. And again, it's not something that's a problem for next year. But how long does it take to reinforce the grid? If you end up with a neighborhood that's served by a feeder and 10 people buy electric vehicles and they all come home between 6 and 7 and plug them in after driving them all day, what is that going to do to the feeder? How much planning horizon do you need to prepare for that? To me, more importantly, when do you need to bring the policies in place to make sure that the transformation of the transportation sector, EVs, happens in a systematic way that doesn't have people just willy-nilly putting in EV stations in the garage, which have, you know, every year the draw they have, the time it takes to recharge your vehicle goes down. That means the draw, the amperage of the plug-in is going up. So what's that going to do to the grid? Frankly, I'm not the engineer. I was as an undergraduate, but I haven't been an engineer since the year out of graduation, undergraduate. But we know it's going to be dramatic. And their planning is critical. If we have dumb chargers, that means they don't have a computer brain. Whenever people plug them in, they start drawing power. A smart charger is controlled by the utility. It looks at the overall load of the system, manages when the charging takes place for the individual vehicles. It recognizes the vehicles as being batteries. So it looks at the system and looks at this battery storage it has throughout the system, and it manages charging through the day and, more importantly, through the night to get off-peak charging of those batteries. With everybody who has an unusual need, gee, I came home, my car is still at 25%. If I've got till the morning, that's fine, except I'm leaving on a driving trip today, this evening. I need my battery charged up by 10 o'clock because I'm headed off in the night to go driving. So there's a button to push or computer switch or something that says I override the standard utility-controlled charging because I need my battery charged up. That may be a premium to have sort of on-peak, if you want, charging. But you have a smart infrastructure which makes sure everybody gets the charging they need, but we do it in a way that does not disrupt the power grid. If we don't get ahead of the curve and make sure we have smart charging infrastructure in place, because the rules require that, by the time we recognize the need, by the time it becomes a problem, it's too late. We've got 100,000 dumb chargers out there. You can't get people to replace them overnight. So we need to think about these things ahead and get them in place so that when the disruption comes, we are managing the impact of that disruption. So those are the white elephants. And there's more. I'm not trying to be an exhaustive list, but these are examples. These are kinds of things that we know about, we can plan for and prepare for them. The gray rhinos are the unknown knowns. They say that comes from the hunter and gatherer days where the fellow and his wife were sitting by the fire. They heard the rumbling in the woods. They said, I don't know what that is, but it's something pretty big because I can feel the ground shaking. I know a disruption's coming. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know what form it's going to really take. But do I be afraid and look around to figure out what's going on and try to do something to prepare for it? Or do I just say, it's probably fine. I'll just sit here by the fire until it comes into the light and tramples me. So in that category, I put climate change. We're having a lot of trouble figuring out what the impact of climate change will be on the grid. There's lots of different scenarios. But anybody who's not thinking about those possibilities and preparing for the most severe impacts, finding ways to mitigate those impacts, doing what strategic planners like to call watchtowers. You have a watchtower so you can look out and see what's coming. Did you know that rhino is coming down the path? You're looking over the trees, you can see it before it hits you. If you don't have those preparations for climate change, you're at risk. Microgrids. These are, again, some people say there's no question there'll be microgrids. Others are unsure. What they look like exactly, we're not sure. It could be what I've already talked about, the new development outside of town where they're putting in a couple hundred houses, and instead of being connected to the electric grid, there's a local gas-fired generator that keeps everybody going. It could be many different things. I mentioned Siemens by name here, only because one of my clients is New Brunswick Power. They've been working with Siemens for several years on developing the so-called utility of the future. I looked and say Siemens, a huge international German-based company, they are going through working with that utility and others, developing their knowledge of the electricity customer, of utilities, that whole system. And I'm saying this is all a learning experience for them. So within a couple of years, they're going to be coming and knocking on the doors of SECA people, customers of SAS Power, saying, we have a solution for you, and if SAS Power is not prepared for that, Siemens will say, we can be in here next year giving you a whole new way of getting your power, and we'll save you some money. And there'll be another one of these sessions a year later to try to react. The reaction, if it's too late, the customer buys into the plan, and they're gone. Again, foresight's required. What will the microgrids look like? Well, you look at what Siemens and others are doing, and by the way, Siemens Canada has the New Brunswick Power experiment, last time I looked anyway, is featured on the website as here's the wonderful things we're doing, the wonderful technologies we're developing. Non-regulated businesses are disrupting the industry. Utilities, some utilities are getting the business of offering distributed energy resources to their customers. Vermont Electric Company, this is not the right name, working with solar panels and batteries from Tesla, developed a program where a customer can sign up with them on essentially a rental program, just like renting a hot water heater or renting a furnace from the utility. You can go to the utility, you could have a self-generation units installed in your house. And you wouldn't have to pay for it up front. You don't have to worry about installation. Just sign on the dotted line. We have a new rent. We have a rental fee, which is less than the cost of the power. And you sign up with them, and they take care, or they, it's not actually the electric utility, but their partners take care of installing, maintaining the whole system. And this is something which can evolve and improve over time. Does that mean I'm in trouble? And that is being done as a non-regulated business because it's a competitive alternative. Other people in the market can do that as well. But it's very convenient to do that through the utility. So these are those kinds of offerings, either by the utility and by others, will disrupt the industry. From a utility perspective, it's an opportunity to generate some net revenues that offset the inevitable lost net revenues as you lose load to self-generation. There you go. Turning into the black swans. Well, in truth, by definition, a black swan is something that is not anticipated. So by definition, I can't actually give you examples of it, because as soon as I give you an example, technically it makes it a gray rhino. But ignoring that for the moment, anything that changes the game radically within the lifetime of the existing assets would be a black swan. So a really significant breakthrough in storage, something that takes the cost of storage to half, a quarter, 10% of the current cost, would be a game changer. Some people are predicting, which means it's not really a black swan, a breakthrough in hydrogen technology. Perhaps natural gas pipelines become hydrogen pipelines. Instead of having electric vehicles, we'll actually have hydrogen vehicles. This is a very strong argument. It says that there will be a leap where essentially hydrogen, before electric vehicles really make deep inroads in North America, hydrogen will leap past them, and it won't be a transformation to electric vehicles, it'll be a transformation to hydrogen for the transportation sector, which will get rid of those fossil fuels. Huge disruptor generally, but would have a significant impact in the long-term plans of electric utilities. And hydrogen, you know, sort of small-scale generation that is not dependent upon the sun shining or the wind blowing, combined with still then modest backup, becomes a game changer for the inroads of distributed energy resources generally. So that covers the animal kingdom. Any reactions, comments so far? Okay. I will take the lack of comments as being everybody has heard all this, comes all together, and we've got 100% agreement that this is the future of the industry, right? Responding to disruption. So just very quickly, going back to those drivers we saw a few slides back, transforming the markets. Markets are changing. That's disrupting the market. The primary risk for all utilities, this, and again, I'm not speaking to SaskPower on this, I'm speaking, you know, this is what I say to utilities across the country. The primary strategy is, what do you need to do to retain your customers? You need pricing and services that make you be the preferred provider when you're faced with competition. And you can't do that as a reaction, you have to do that in anticipation. And in part, the CRS rate is SaskPower's attempt to get ahead of what they see as, and I agree with them, as a gray rhino that's headed toward the camp. Advancing technologies. The utilities can respond. The key problem there is pricing for electric utilities across Canada, around the world, is based on historic costs. We use cost allocation models, and I've been in front of many of you a couple of times looking at SaskPower's cost allocation model. The way rates are set for utilities, and not for anybody outside of the regulated utility sector, the way rates are set is we have a cost of service, we do what's called a fully allocated costing model, which takes those historic costs and allocate them out to customer classes based on cost drivers. And however that falls out, you end up with fair pricing. It's a fair way to make sure everybody pays their share based on the cost they cause. So it's a fairness-driven approach that does not address market realities. So pricing, and that's part of the transmission market, is pricing has to become more real to competitive environment. Again, we're talking not the next rate case. We're talking 5-10 years down the road. There's got to be a transition, which is hopefully not a disjointed one, but is a planned one. And the companies have to lever their, what I like to refer to as competitive advantages. If I go to a company and say, I'll take you off grid, I need to buy new storage assets for them probably, certainly some backup facilities and so on. SaskPower has, without spending a cent, it's got the backup capacity because it's got the grid. It's got the whole infrastructure now. So they have, from a market pricing perspective, which is all about future costs, not past costs, it's all about marginal costing, they have essentially very close to zero marginal costs. They can compete with anybody if they're free to move away from the traditional price-setting models. They cannot do that without sort of regulatory acceptance. It's not quite regulatory in here in Saskatchewan, but without the acceptance of the players in the market that we are going to start thinking about pricing differently. If there's no change in the way utilities price, the disruptions, in my view, put utilities everywhere at risk. Bell Canada would not be here today if, when the market was open to competition, they had to price on a cost-to-service basis the way they did in the beginning of the 90s. They changed with the times, with the support of the regulator. And that doesn't mean that a utility will start becoming the duplicate of a competitive company. What it means is utilities have inherent advantages. Where they have them, they can be exploited. Where they don't have them, they can work in partnership with entrepreneurial private sector companies. So the SaskPower and other utilities' advantage is not in installing solar panels. I know a couple of my clients have tried to open businesses where they're installing solar panels and they haven't done very well. They're not efficient at that. The marketplace is far better. But for providing storage backup, nobody can beat them. The converging industries. IT partners will be critically important. One of the things that's foreseen of the smart home, the managed electricity consumption, that's all being driven by IT. There are certainly those who are saying that the competition for utilities 5 years down the road, in fact, almost today, is Google and Amazon, not electric companies. And when they say it's competition, what they're competing for is who owns the customer. Who sends the bill to the customer? Who does the customer call when they need something? Therefore, who is able to respond to the customer needs? The competitor for SaskPower, within some number of years, will be the Googles of the world, the Microsofts of the world, not electric companies. Possibly Siemens, because Siemens is a technology company as well as a hardware-type company. It's hardware and the soft part of the IT. We don't know exactly, but those are the kinds of competitors to be facing in the future. The changing consumption patterns, that's a driver of disruption which can be controlled, for example, smart EV charging. The environmental concerns, that speaks into, and the emergence of prosumers speaks to the diversity of customers. I'm not close enough to SaskPower to know their mindset. As I say, I deal with a lot of utilities across the country, and they have a really hard time thinking that we have diverse customers. They talk about the customer. Maybe they talk about the residential customer and the industrial customer. They have a hard time saying, like a Google, there are a lot of different kinds of people out there. We want to attract them, so we have a lot of different variants of our products to meet the different market segments. The future of the electricity sector, in my view, like the telecom sector, you start thinking about the market as being full of segments of many different kinds of customers, and you have to tailor products to meet their needs, because if you don't, as the individual market segments have alternatives available to them, one segment goes to one other supplier, a different goes to a different supplier. The market gets broken up with individual suppliers meeting individual needs. And that's one of those will be environmentally minded customers. Another group will be the prosumer group. Different requirements, different kinds of customers, but there are environmentally concerned consumers and prosumers in the residential sector, in the commercial sector, in the industrial sector. That brings to an end the preamble. Now let's actually talk about the CRS rate. My comments on the CRS rate are driven in large part by the thinking that's been embedded in the discussion so far. And in the report, when I started, it was, here's CRS rate, here's what it is, here's what I think about it. And as I tried to explain why I think, and the comments I want to make, the why behind the comments I'm making, well, that led to the whole front end of the paper, which explains how the industry is changing and how there's a need to manage the disruption. So this is structured, the comments on the tariff design is structured to parallel the tariff sheet. I was working from that. That's the one, I've got the unpublished version, the one, the straight tariff sheet, right? And in the tariff sheet, it starts off with applicability. Applicability, it applies to power class customers requiring capacity reservation who are served through customer-owned transformation and attaining the majority of their power requirements through self-generation. Well, the customer-owned transformation is a moot point because all of the power class customers are customer-owned transformation and required to be. So my comments there were, my reaction when this is put in front of me, well, yeah, you're reacting to a problem in the power class, but given what I've been talking about, the same problem exists for all the classes. So what are you doing about the same issue in the other classes? Now, that's not really a comment on how this tariff sheet should be changed, but it's just a flag that SAS Power is aware of, but everybody has to understand that this is a response which is appropriate in this class, with a couple of caveat comments I have. But the concept, if not literally being a capacity reservation service, the concept is applicable across all classes because all classes are facing the same disruptions of potential self-generation. A primary concern for me is the second sub-bullet in that first part. Customers should be customers. Sorry for the spelling. Customers need information on the rate impact of adopting self-generation before making their investment decisions. If SAS Power or any other utility waits until customers have adopted a lot of self-generation and then comes in with a rate that is the right rate, but is different than the rates they have today, a customer can be caught with the rug pulled out from under them. Customers have to know what the rules of the game are going to be over the lifetime of their investment. If they're going to buy rooftop solar and batteries, and they do the economic analysis today based on the rates, they may come up with what looks like a good decision. But if those rates are going to change, that decision could be turned into a bad decision. That would be unfair to those customers. It would be unreasonable. Customers should not be disadvantaged by thinking that today's rate structures are what's going to be there forever if the company knows they're going to be changing. What I'm saying is we should assume that change is coming. Customers should know what that is. That means the sooner that these issues can be thought through and the sooner customers have information on where things are headed, it's great. I've seen in other jurisdictions when things change, what tends to happen is the customer who would have the rug pulled out from under them gets grandfathered. By definition, when you grandfather a rate, what you're saying is, well, out of fairness, I'm going to leave a rate where it is for this guy, even though it's not the right rate. Grandfathering usually means somebody who's receiving a subsidy, because you don't want to take the subsidy away from them. They're getting a subsidy, you let them keep it. That means all other customers have to continue to subsidize that customer. Bottom line is let's move this ahead before the market changes. Let's tell people what the rate impact is going to be of the changes that we foresee. I look at self, CRS is limited, in, again, in that applicability. The customer that is required to take the CRS rate is attaining the majority of their power requirement through self-generation. That, there's really no, to me, I'm assuming that means 50%. There's no difference between somebody who's got 51% self-generation and 49% generation. In fact, conceptually, there's no difference between 50 or 60% generation and 10% generation. The customer needs some backup. They should be paying a price that's appropriate for that backup. So I understand that there's reasons why that 50% limit is put into place now. My belief or my suggestion is that that 50% is a temporary measure to limit who's getting CASI reservation service. That should be, and you should move beyond that as soon as possible. The problem is that that rule creates a incentive for gaming the system. The problem we have, I'm going to ask a question, I'm going to ask you to respond for a moment. From past sessions with SAS Power, who understands the Berry correction? I see some SAS Power hands going up. Have you heard of the Berry correction? Okay. Perhaps we should have an hour on the Berry correction. the report, and if you're actually interested in sort of the technicalities of what's going on here, read it. The SAS Power has a cost allocation model. It produces what are called customer-related costs, i.e. costs that are caused just by having a customer. Billing is an easy thing. A customer-related cost is recovered by the monthly charge. There are also capacity-related costs. For example, the transmission system. It doesn't matter how much power you've got going down a transmission line. The key factor of a transmission system is it's got a capacity, a limited amount of power that you can push through that wire. To some extent, generation is driven by capacity constraints. We're dealing with power class customers, so distribution is not relevant here. So let's just basically talk about, so in generation and transmission, there are capacity-related costs. In generation, there's also energy-related costs, i.e., costs that are caused in proportion to the number of kilowatt hours or megawatt hours being generated. Whereas capacity costs are related to the kilowatts or megawatts that are being produced at a point in time. So, and the capacity-related costs are recovered through a capacity-related charge, and energy through an energy-related charge. That's all straightforward and simple, except for one problem. You as customers are not billed, customers with a demand charge, you are not billed on the basis of the coincident peak demand. The cost driver is how much power do you need in the peak hours of the year. And it's spread across a few hours, but a relatively small number of hours. So it's capacity costs. You are billed on the basis of your what's called the non-coincident peak, your peak. Your peak may not occur at the same time as the system peak. Right? As a consequence of that, the total number of non-coincident peak hours that people are billed on is more than the coincident peak hours. That causes that, so you end up with spreading across everybody with a slightly lower rate where they get the right amount of revenue by multiplying the rate by the non-coincident peak quantity of hours instead of a weight would be higher times the coincident peak hours. Now, that leads to an inequity within a class in terms of high load factor customers and low load factor customers. The company has adopted a method, which some other utilities, not a lot, some others use, to correct for that inequity. The inequity is that somebody who is a load factor customer, their non-coincident peak is probably, a simple thing is it's 100% load factor customer, their non-coincident peak is occurring at the peak. So without the Berry correction, a high load factor customer is undercharged. They're not paying their full causal costs. The Berry correction corrects for that by moving part of the cost recovery from the demand charge to the energy charge. Because it says somebody who's high load factor is using relatively high total energy through the year. So it's a rough justice way of correcting for the inherent error of billing on the basis of non-coincident peak instead of coincident peak. This technicality is driving people out of the room. I understand it. But the Berry correction then creates an issue that you end up with a high charge for energy that a customer that self-generates, right? They're avoiding the energy, but they still need the same capacity. Because they're looking at backup, they see they still need the same amount of power on the peak day. But they're consuming a lot less energy through the year. So because of the Berry correction to the basic rate, you end up with a situation where a high load factor customer can save a lot of money by self-generating because they avoid the energy charge, which has been loaded up, if you want, with some of the capacity costs. But the capacity costs are still being incurred by the company. So with the capacity reservation service, what the primary thing they've done is to remove this Berry correction because you say it doesn't exist if somebody's self-generating. That inequity doesn't exist. So that makes sense to get rid of that for this charge. But it's still there for the main charge, which means high load factor customer, without it actually being economic, because of a quirk of the rate design, they've got a strong incentive to go to self-generate. This is just a quirk of the rate design, the existing rate design. That inequity. And again, if you read it and think about it in the paper, hopefully it will be clear if it isn't going to be clear from these ad hoc comments. That same incentive exists for somebody who's below 50%. A high load factor customer is going to have an incentive to, they're going to want to get onto this capacity reservation service. So there's a couple of possibilities. One is you do what I said, which is reduce the rate. Reduce that limit if it has to be 50% self-generation. And they'll generate 10% in order to get the capacity reservation service. So you can't implement the removal of that lower limit right away. But, of course, you're still getting that bias, that inequity, for those who you're just sort of pushing people to get more than 50% self-generation. You're making them get more generation to get the saving of the lower energy charge, in effect. So there's got to be better alignment of SAS Power's basic rate, the E rates, and the N rates. And part of that is going to be the removal of the Berry correction across all rate classes, because that is causing a false price signal, which is causing what I call uneconomic bypass. So that gets a little more complicated, but that's where, you know, that's sort of, you got to understand that behind my comments here. The 50% doesn't make sense. It should be a generalized backup service, regardless of how much self-generation you have, and it should be applying to all classes. That is not something which can be done by amending this tariff sheet for the CRS rate. It's got to be a review of rates more generally, and I'm going to be astounded if you don't see more suggestions to revision of the tariff sheets in general to address this inequity, or there's going to be a lot of uneconomic bypass. Part of that will involve updating the cost allocation model, because we now have three new classes. They should be in the model. You do allocation. There's a number of steps to fully implement this this change, which is part of the transition to the new world where we are responding to the competitive pressures of self-generation and distributed energy resources in general. That was a pretty quick recap of what is, I think, a very important and central part of the paper, the report. Before I move to the reservation capacity, any questions or comments? And as you hear at the end, of course, there's going to be an opportunity following this to submit written questions. And I'm anticipating that if my report has not explained it well enough, send in your questions and we'll have a more complete explanation if you don't get it from the report. The reservation capacity, because of my nature, I guess, because inherently I'm a cheater if it's going to help me, something like that, gaming of the system, I always look at something just like tax rules, right? How do I obey the rules but work around them in a way that benefits me? Gaming. It's legal, but I'm getting more out of it than it appears to be. So I looked at this and I said, there's a reservation capacity. If I'm a customer, I nominate for the reservation capacity I need. Well, that's a no-brainer. I've got to pay for the amount I nominate. I'm going to nominate 10% of what I need, and I'll pay for 10% of what I should be paying. That's easy. Now, the company says you have to justify it. Well, a smart company will go to people like me and say, okay, come up with a story that justifies why we only need 10% of the nomination. And it may be we've got a form of generation that it's not intermittent like solar or wind, so we're gonna be running all the time, we're not going to need the power. Of course, somewhere down the line, we're going to have maintenance on our system, our self-generation, and we're going to shut it down to do that maintenance. The company has written into the tariff says, if you go over your nomination, you essentially get ratcheted up to what you actually consumed for a year. Okay, I looked and said, okay, that's easy. I'll nominate 10%. I'll pay for 10% until I have a shutdown. Then I'll pay for 100% of my need for a year. And then I'll renominate back to 10%. And I may have to negotiate with the company because they'll say that's not credible. But it'll become a negotiation of how little can I get away with. Well, I also do a lot of work in the gas industry. There's the concept in the gas industry, which is pretty much universal, of a contract demand. You nominate what you need, and that's all you're going to get. So if you nominate 10%, if the rules are a bit different than the way it's written, if you nominate 10% and maintenance time comes and you shut down, you get 10% of your requirement, not 100%. You only get what you've been paying for. And you either have a contract demand or you have what's commonly referred to a curtailable or interruptible service. In other words, okay, if we've got spare capacity, we'll give you more than what you've nominated. The key there is customers have to pay for what the company has to include in its planning. If they're going to include 10% of your load in planning, okay, pay for 10%. But then you can't be guaranteed to get anything more than that. because they haven't planned for it. They haven't built the facilities to accommodate it. And if you and a lot of other customers all come in and nominate 10% of their need, perhaps that next transmission upgrade or that next generation station doesn't get built because it's not part of the plan. So you're probably not affected next year, but once low nominations become common, you end up with an undersized system if people have misreported their actual needs. So it's just a matter of making the system work from a planning perspective. So you got to get nominations right. If it is interruptible service, okay, you don't interruptible by definition, you don't include it in the plan. Because if you need it and the customers, the other customers who have firm service are taking all the capacity, you're out of luck. Now, of course, for planned interruptions, you can probably make sure those happen in off, you know, at times that there's not heavy load in the system and you're going to be okay. But if you have an unplanned outage, you better hope you're not unlucky and it happens at the time of peak demand. So that's why I say, you know, if it's nominations that are kind of screened by the government, they've got or by SAS Power, they have to accept it. That's where it invites controversy. So the preferred design will have no gaming incentive. So that's a strong recommendation from me. It's either contract demand or excess demand invites large penalties. I've sort of said five times a standard demand charge, but the key thing is it's got to be high enough that the customer can't save money by gaming the system. It's all about gaming. Almost through. Billing demand is straightforward. The rates in the E classes, because of the Berry correction, the demand charges are lower than the actual causal costs, and energy charges are higher in order to deal with that inequity of billing on the basis of non-coincident peak demand. So what I'm saying is there has to be a rerun of the models. You take the cost allocation model, you put the N classes in. With the N classes, the N, you can say they're the N for new, the new classes. I know it's not. So you determine what are the appropriate cost-based man energy charges. And what's interesting is the current rate structure looks at the class on average and says for the power class, it's roughly 65% load factor overall. Because of the way the rates are structured, it's high load factor customers that are going to go to the N rate. You remove the Berry correction, and a high load factor customer, their off-peak demand is going to be essentially the same as their peak demand. And that's going to lead to much higher rates. And that's what you're seeing in the tariff sheet. Although they haven't done it the way I've described. They've sort of done a correction that approximates that. I think the model has to be updated. Assumptions have to be made about the load profile of customers in the class. A new calculation is done. And as long as you've got the utility charging fully allocated cost-based rates, taking costs from the cost allocation model, that's what you're doing for all classes, you'll drive N22, 23, and 24 rates, which reflect a much higher load factor than the average for the power class. A higher load factor means a higher demand charge. I think, again, for purposes of customer information, that calculation should be done, and customers should be aware of it as soon as possible, even if it's where the rate's going to go in the next few years. Where companies change their approach to rate design, typically if there's significant changes that are impacting some customers, there's most changes, there are winners and losers, the average rate doesn't change, but there's a shifting with some people paying more, some people paying less. Very often that has to be phased in over a period of years. New Brunswick Power, one of my clients, is getting rid of grandfathered classes. the transition system for different types of grandfathering that are being eliminated was anywhere from 2 to 10 years. In Ontario, where they went to a fully fixed charge for transmission and distribution for residential customers, it was a 3-year phase-in. Now, that wasn't because the average rate didn't change at all. That was just a phase-in to deal with the outliers on the two sides, where some people are seeing large savings and some are seeing large increases. Nobody complained about large savings, but the ones who are seeing large increases, that was disruptive to them. So it phased in, which meant the people who were saving money, the save-in was phased to offset the phase-in of the higher charges. So the rates, given the current utility rate-setting methodology, need to be updated with that, and that has not been done yet. That will flow through another rate case, but I'm flagging it as I would expect those changes would be coming. And in my view, the company should do those calculations and get those numbers out there, let everybody know not only what is going to be the impact in the next rate case, but if they know there's going to be multi-year impacts, that should be information that is available to the general public. And with that, Q&A and discussion. Is there any reaction other than, oh my God? And if not, of course, as I've already mentioned, and Scott will be highlighting now, a process for after today questions. And I'm on standby to receive and respond to any questions that you may have. I hope I've given you some flavor of where I think things are headed, but I will have to say, this is my report, this is my thinking. SAS Power, you'll hear from them with their thoughts, not today, but I'm sure in future rate cases and so on. But what you're hearing from me today comes out of, if you go to that second page of the slide, comes out of the experience that I've highlighted there. And nothing in here, other than specifics on the CRS, nothing in here is anything different than I've been talking about, and people keep hiring me to come and talk about it in corporate strategic planning sessions across the country. There's your microphone, so make sure it gets recorded.
Could you comment on how common this CRS method is in Canada?
Yes, and the report has, one of the sections talks about what's a cross-jurisdictional survey, and what's done, there's appendix, which actually looks across other jurisdictions. That appendix reflects what has been done is on the public record. Beyond that, without naming companies and so on, I can say, across the country, everybody's struggling with this. There is no one answer. The CRS rate that you're seeing is along the lines of the things that others are looking at. On the record, you'll see some utilities where they're saying, we've got this problem. What we need is an exit fee. An exit fee is, if a customer's leaving the system, you calculate all the costs of the assets that were built, quote-unquote, for them, that they're leaving behind, and you charge them for that. They've got to pay for it. Therefore, no other customer is going to be having to pick up the tab for the assets they're leaving behind. That's not being recommended here. Personally, I don't recommend that. I think there's better ways to do it. I don't think it's politically sustainable once it becomes widespread. But that's another one. Other than that, it's common for there to be, it's more commonly named a backup rate. And there's different ways of structuring that. And the actual dollars you put on the rate depends on terms and conditions. So some backup rates are based on interruptible supply. They're much lower. Others are based on a firm backup. And some of that depends on if you've got an intermittent supply, then you're using the grid, you know, on a daily basis, right? It's a different kind of backup than you're there just for outages. So I can say what you'll see is there's not a lot of experience in other jurisdictions, but within a couple years, most utilities are looking at bringing something in. If you want more information, I think the very best place for information on this is that the Alberta Utility Commission is in a second kind of information gathering process. They've had a report on distribution connected DERs. One has been completed. I could ask me the question, I'll give you the citations and the links. And they're in the middle of a second process around rate design, where they're trying to get their heads around what's the impact of distributed energy resources, where's the industry headed, and they've invested a lot of money and a lot of resources into that information collection. The report they've done and the one that's pending are not decisions, right? They have not come up with policy prescriptions. The AUC, that's the Alberta Utility Commission, is simply coming up with an assessment of the challenges. And that will then be background information for looking at proposals of the companies they regulate. That'll provide, in a sense, the front half of what my report does. And they do it far better than I do because they got a lot more resources than well, you could have matched the AUC's resources for me and I would have given you a 1,000-page report. Does that... it'll be less helpful than it should be, but there's... I'd say you look at it, just remember there's a lot going on that isn't reported yet. Any other question? Okay. I look forward to receiving some written questions. Unless I send out such a brilliant job, there's nothing more to ask. Scott, you will outline that process?
Thanks, John, for taking the time and coming out and sharing the findings of your report today. Very informative and lots of information to digest. So you've already alluded to essentially what the next steps are. All of this information is found on our website, so don't feel as though you have to write all this down. But what we're looking to do is provide the audio to this session on our website, as will we have the presentation and the report. We're targeting a little over a week, I think, the essentially from today through to March 6th to provide those written questions or interrogatories. On the website, you'll see the email address that we would ask you to send them to. It's crsratereview@sasspower.com. We've then committed to provide a written response the following week, March 9th through 13th. And then kind of the last step in the process, and we'll gauge this based on the quantity and the types of questions that come in, is that if we find it necessary to have a second follow-up conference call, we'll look to schedule that sometime the week of March 16th to the 20th. I will use this opportunity for one last chance to ask a question. And if there's none, I would just like to thank everybody in attendance here today, as well as folks that are joining us online for taking the time today to listen. And I encourage you to take advantage of that question or interrogatory process and to express any questions or comments you might have. Thank you.
Oh.
Hi, Jerry. Yes.
You have Mr. Audrey for the question, what is your plan at this point relative to his record?
You're breaking up a little bit, Jerry, but I'll try to... respond a bit to what I think I heard you say. It's basically what SaskPower's position on basically taking the information included in John's report, and what are we looking at in terms of next steps?
Yes.
Good question. And this report is relatively recently received by SaskPower as well. What I can tell you is that we've been, over the last number of months, doing some analysis on, in fact, looking at the impacts of a Barry included rate versus removing of the Barry correction. So we continue to do that analysis. Typically, these adjustments coincide with when we're doing a rate application as part of the overall public process. So in terms of the immediate next steps, we will continue to go through that report, look at what some of the recommendations are, try to do a little bit of analytics, some number crunching on what potential impacts might be based on those recommendations, and we'll definitely keep you informed as we carry through on the process.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. I think if there's no other questions, again, I would just like to thank everybody for joining us today and look forward to the back and forth communication over the next few weeks. Thank you.